This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for listening. Well, Ted Cruz is in. Hillary Clinton is almost in. But today, Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky, is in for the 2016 presidential campaign.
I have a message. A message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our country back.
That's Rand Paul announcing his candidacy today in Louisville. Senator Paul first took the national political stage just a few years ago when he was swept into office on a Republican landslide in the 2010 midterms. And since then, he's made privacy a centerpiece of his political appeal. Here's Rand Paul at 2014 CPAC. It's the Conservative Political Action Conference.
As our voices rise in protest, the NSA monitors your every phone call. If you have a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.
And here's Rand Paul taking a very un-Republican response to Ed Snowden's leaks on CNN in 2013.
I do think that when history looks at this, they're going to contrast the behavior of James Clapper, our national intelligence director, with Edward Snowden. Mr. Clapper lied in Congress in defiance of the law in the name of security. Mr. Snowden told the truth in the name of privacy. So I think there will be a judgment because both of them broke the law.
Rand Paul has also called for more pressure on the Fed.
We created the Fed, and Congress has abdicated its duty, and a lot of people are getting rich off of Fed activity. We have a huge stock market bubble. A lot of wealthy people get wealthier, but I think a lot of poor people are getting poorer, and I think our economy is struggling. There's an illusion of wealth. So I'm for looking into what's going on at the Fed and not allowing it to be secret.
Senator Rand Paul there on Audit the Fed. He was on CNN's Out Front with Aaron Burnett in July of 2014. So he set himself apart from most Republicans in those ways that are popular with libertarian voters, some young voters. But is it enough to propel him to the White House? I put that question to Dave Weigel. He's a reporter for Bloomberg News who's been covering Rand Paul. And Dave told me that what could set Rand apart from other candidates is his consistent messaging and his insistence that the party needs to reach out to younger and more diverse voters.
We only have two candidates in the field for now. That's going to change soon. But there's a real difference between the Rand Paul approach of admitting the Republican Party cannot win unless it expands to non-white voters, to younger voters, and the Cruz version, which is we just need more conservatives to turn out and don't need to change anything.
Well, let's go to that, because here's an example of Rand Paul saying tacitly, we need more young voters, we need more minority voters. Listen.
This isn't, like I say, black, white, or brown problem. It's a poverty problem. Is many people can't keep up with their child support payments, but instead of like working out a schedule, we send them back to prisons. We actually have like debtors' prisons. We have all of these things that are unjust about our criminal system that could be changed. I think that's the biggest thing we have to work on. It's probably criminal justice.
Sentencing reform and criminal justice reform. Rand Paul in the Senate has a lot of liberal Democratic allies on this issue, really bipartisan. And this is part of what you're talking about, Dave.
It is. And he has figured, and I think to the worry of some Democrats I've talked to, is the worry of Ben Jealous, the former president and NAACP, who I talked to a couple of weeks ago. They think that Paul has actually outflanked Democrats on this issue that Democrats should own, but they're kind of nervous about alienating voters. I mean, Paul's theory is that if he is the nominee, and that is a long shot, but if he's the nominee, he gets the Republican vote out, and he gets these people who have not been spoken to by the Democrats except taken for granted. Lots of Republicans say this, but none of them have been as specific in how they reach out to Democrats as Paul.
There's an issue that Republicans own, however, that a lot of Republicans think Rand Paul could ruin for them, and it's national security. Let me play you an example of Rand Paul from back in 2007, back when a lot of Republicans and Democrats called him an isolationist.
Even our own intelligence community's consensus opinion now is that they're not a threat. I mean, my dad says they don't have an Air Force. They don't have a Navy. You know, it's ridiculous to think that they're a threat to our national security. It's not even that viable to say they're a national threat to Israel.
Dave Weigel, he's talking about Iran. Back in 2007, that's Rand Paul. Now, he has to work. He's been working to shed that image as an isolationist and has changed his positions to be a more viable Republican.
He hasn't, and I'm trying to become a Kremlinologist of the way Rand Paul talks about this, because to hear him tell it, he has been completely consistent since he first started talking about foreign policy, really when his dad was running for president in 2007. You can find interviews that Rand gave to local papers, and interviews he gave to local radio stations, where he said basically the United States can pull out a lot of its entanglements with the world. Iran poses no threat to us. Israel can fight on its own. He insists that his current position is tempered a little bit by realism, but basically the same, that blowback is the problem that no one else pays attention to, that intervening is actually the root cause of all these problems. And we, the reporter, should focus less on what his solutions are. And I think to an extent, I mean, he's right that the media missed some of the nuances of this. I mean, Paul proposed at the end of 2014 authorization of force against ISIS. And this was covered in a lot of media as Paul declaring war. You know, Paul's a hypocritical libertarian because he's now declaring war. What he was trying to do was say that the current operations against ISIS, which are happening without any extra authorization, should be used as a reason to end the old authorizations. And this was something that I think spoke to his libertarian base, that convinced some conservatives that he was more thoughtful on foreign policy, at least in adapting to reality. It worked pretty well for him in a way that I don't think people foresaw, because you really need to dig into the years of what he's been saying. I mean, right. I don't think anyone has kind of freelance their own foreign policy and their own theory of government as much as he has over the last 6 years.
Well, we should add and point out that still many Republicans remain fundamentally uncomfortable with Rand Paul. There is a group called the Foundation for a Secure and Prosperous America. They're a 501c4, if you haven't heard of them. That's $1 million in Republican national security money going up against Rand Paul today, Dave Weigel, which means he's got a lot of Republican people in the establishment against him. Dave Weigel, you're off to South Carolina, Iowa, and New Hampshire right now, correct?
Yes, I am. Rand is doing a ton of media. I mean, he's been girding for this. He took a week off beforehand. So I'm trying to be at least as energetic as the 52-year-old guy I'm covering.
Dave Weigel is with Bloomberg News. He's in Louisville with Rand Paul. Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
And let's stay in Louisville now with Philip Bailey, columnist for Louisville Magazine and longtime Rand Paul watcher. Hi, Philip.
Hey, Todd. How you doing?
I'm great, and thanks for being with us. Now, you've covered Rand Paul for a long time. So how long have you known in your heart that this day would come?
It was interesting because I remember the first time someone introduced me to Rand Paul saying, Ron Paul's son's running for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. This was in early 2009, maybe even February or March 2009. And the first thing I thought was, Ron Paul's son lives in Kentucky? ever since then, I think what happened is sometime in 2012, probably late 2011, a group of folks gathered and told Rand Paul he can run for president and maybe even win the presidency. And ever since then, I think he's been directing a lot of his message and trying to hit the pressure points: college students, disaffected African Americans who are Democrats, groups like that, and hitting them with a message of, you know, free markets, libertarian leaning government. And particularly when it comes to issues of national security, which really, through Edward Snowden and other stories, swept up the entire country. I think that Paul began to say to himself and to others, I can do this. I'm really going to model my Senate career as a bid for the presidency.
All right. Well, you mentioned national security, and I put the question briefly to Dave Weigel just a minute ago, and I want to put it to you, Philip Bailey. Listen to this ad. This is from the Foundation for a Secure and Prosperous America. Now, this is $1 million, as I mentioned, in Republican national security establishment money going up against Rand Paul. Listen.
Rand Paul supports Obama's negotiations with Iran, and he doesn't understand the threat.
You know, it's ridiculous to think that they're a threat to our national security.
Rand Paul is wrong and dangerous. Tell him to stop siding with Obama, because even one Iranian bomb would be a disaster.
Now, Philip Bailey, even taking away the ominous-sounding voiceover and ominous music there, this suggests that a lot of Republicans don't want him. He may have a path to nomination with more minority voters in the Republican fold and younger voters, but there are a lot of wealthy, powerful Republicans who don't want Rand.
I'll remind folks, back in 2010, a Republican hawk by the name of Mitch McConnell opposed Rand Paul in a primary. So the Paul team, his core folks, know how to do this. They've taken on the Republican establishment before. This is obviously going to be at a higher level, and the stakes are much higher. But for many of us who have observed Paul from the beginnings, this is in many ways a recreation or a sequel to his Senate race, taking on an establishment, being called, you know, an isolationist, all these things I think Paul has encountered before. The real question is, what has Paul learned from that experience in 2010 to now? And that's the question a lot of folks are having. The attacks he knew were going to come from his father, inheritance, the political inheritance he got from him, from his own comments about Iran and other comments about Israel, et cetera, even though the center likes to sometimes deny that he ever said some of those things. But still, they were prepared for this. The real question is, what has the Paul campaign learned from, you know, their fight with Mitch McConnell in 2010 and converting him to their side? How will he be able to fight off a national barrage to that same degree? I'm not sure the senator has shown he has learned a whole lot personally from that experience, other than to really recreate his Senate campaign. But I'm eager to see how Doug Stafford and other aides close to him plan to fortify that idea. He's already beginning to say, well, I didn't really mean it that way. I didn't really say that. He's already beginning to sort of modulate his position, even though it's on the record pretty clearly. But mm-hmm. I think that if anyone has experience fighting off hawks, it would be Rand Paul, who defeated Mitch McConnell's candidate in here in Kentucky.
Well, a lot of people from back in the bluegrass state who know Rand Paul best say he's used to rebranding himself. He's used to the attacks. Philip Bailey, columnist for Louisville Magazine from Louisville right now. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, lots of politicians say all the time, I'm not a scientist, but presidential hopeful Rand Paul has a degree in medicine. He's an ophthalmologist, so he should know how to judge scientific data. Recently, he's changed his positions on controversial issues, saying that climate change is man-made and that it should be confronted. He's tweaked his views on abortion somewhat. Is this a bid to win over moderate voters in early primary states, or has the senator from Kentucky taken a harder look at the evidence? Well, it's an intersection that we're exploring all this week in our series, Political Science, Where Evidence and Ideology Collide. And we're asking you, have you ever seen science misused for political gain? Matt from Ellsworth in Wisconsin says definitely yes. Global warming, or like NPR and scientists like to call it, climate change, it's the largest example of false science being used for a specific political agenda. Because of the threat of climate change and the crisis, the government must pass legislation regulating the amount of man-made greenhouse gases.
Hi, this is Steve from the Bronx. The ideal of science itself knows no politics. Unfortunately, politicians know about science. EPA studies minimize the risk of fracking. FDA studies minimize the risk of GMOs because the heads of those agencies are former executives of the corporations they are supposed to be regulating.
So what do you think? Do politicians abuse science? Do scientists ever abuse politics? Give us your take, 8778MYTAKE. You can tweet us at The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from LegalZoom. For over 10 years, providing solutions for business owners, families, and individuals to get legal help, including incorporation, LLCs, wills, and living trusts. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com, TIAA-CREF, a financial services company helping to create financial outcomes that matter. Learn more at TIAA.org.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.